Right, today is session four, class 12, which is really class 13, just for keeping track of, because we didn't count the Hanukkah one in the sessions of the sheets. That's why I wrote on the top of the sheet, class 12, 13, because it is class 13, but it's sheet 12. Okay, so we're starting the second book. We're going to start a little bit in, because I don't want to start with the whole unit on offerings yet, which is what we get to now, but we're going to start with two specific things. The precept of not to offer, so 118 and 119, not to offer any sacrifice without salt, and the precept of salting all offerings. So it's a positive and negative in one verse, and then we're also going to do the offering of the high court if it erred in a ruling. And hopefully when we...
starts with
212. Yes, it does. What, with 212?
No.
No, you have the wrong book then.
One,
two, three, Marianne.
I know what you guys are. I'm way ahead of
you.
You are ahead of the class. We know that.
So it's okay. You don't have to have it. We have the first to look at also. So I just wanted to start with a smaller unit, and we'll start with a larger unit of offerings after the break, which is only a 1 week break, but still it's a break. Okay, so this is two sides of one coin. So the verse is, "And you shall not let the salt of the covenant of your God be lacking from your meal offering." And further in the verse, "With all your offerings, you shall offer salt." So it starts with the it's one verse, but it starts with the negative. Hello. And continues with the positive. And there's specific wording in here. So, first of all, it's the concept. You have enough chairs? Yeah, you can scooch in. Okay, good. So it's the concept of salting offerings. So you may all be familiar with where we have salting today in our lives. Where is that?
On the challah,
right? Bread. Bread altogether. Challah for Shabbos when it's a more formal table. But actually, many people are careful every time they wash for bread to dip the bread in salt. So, and that's because today our table is like a mizbeach, is like an altar. And our offerings are on the table. So just as one thread of thought in the general unit that we'll start next time on offerings. So when we talk about offerings, not sacrifices, right? Although there is an idea of sacrifice in some of them. But it's offerings, right? They're korbanot, close makers is how I translate them. Something that brings you close. So if you're translating korban as close maker, as a category of things, excuse me, so then you can definitely see how our table substitute for that altar today, because it's around the table that we become close with each other, right? We become close with each other and friends, and that's closer with the Tzelem Elohim that's in our life, with the other people who are created in the image of God. And we should, through that, become closer to God. We should be sharing words of Torah when we're eating with somebody else, so that it is something that bonds human beings through connection with God at the table. So that when we eat with others, we should be coming closer to God. That's the idea of a table, and that's why a table is like a mizbeach, like an altar. And parenthetically, that's why we don't sit on tables. It's a Jewish thing not to sit on a table. We sit on chairs, but we don't sit on tables. And we teach kids that from a pretty young age. It's one of those things that you don't sit on a table, right? Right, and then you just tell them, Shulchan dumel mizbeach, a table is like an altar. That's why we don't. That's the reason. A table is like an altar. We give it that extra honor. It's higher for us.
Does that mean you can't make a tent out of it with your blanket?
I think you could make a tent out of it.
Underneath.
Right, because you're going underneath. Right. So it's not that holy that you can't use it to drape a blanket. But it is that holy that you don't sit on it. Right. So a table is like an altar. Oh, yeah, you can for sure do that. No problem. But we just don't sit on it. Yeah, you can for sure use a table for the many things that it's used for. And you would even occasionally stand on a table, let's say, to change a light bulb or whatever. But it's just not something you do. You don't sit on tables. We have that consciousness that you don't sit on a table. And that's just our own level of respect. It's a respect thing. It's not a halacha thing. It's, for instance, like not learning Torah sitting on the floor. So a teenager might be comfortable. I remember learning that in Bravender, sitting on the floor one day with a friend, learning with our books around us, and a teacher walking in and being aghast. We're learning Torah sitting on the floor? That's a position of mourning. Get up right now. So there's sensitivity. So it's a sensitivity. It's not a halacha, but it is a sensitivity. If we understand the importance of a table and what happens around a table, we don't sit on a table. So
go into a little bit more about challah and salt.
Okay, so salting. So the salting of challah has to do with the offering. So we're going to look first at the offering, and then you'll see why we salt challah. So challah is the beginning. Bread is a meal. Period, right? So any bread, if you're eating bread, even just bread alone, that's a meal. You wash and you bench, and bread is the main thing of a meal. So because a meal is an offering, is something that's a close maker between you and God, so you salt your bread because it is an offering. So the salt comes from this place. The salting of offerings comes from this verse. You should salt an offering. And you shouldn't offer a meal offering without salt. So it's a positive and a negative. So it's interesting because he writes them in order because he's going in order of the Chumash, but he says that the main root he puts in 119, not in 118. So looking at 119, right?
17.
So looking at page 17 at Mitzvah 119. So first he refers us to the long Mitzvah that we looked at, number 95, in the precept of building the temple. Where there's a religious duty of the offering, what the offering does. So we talked about when we build the temple, the point of building the temple is to have God dwell in us. So it's a physical pursuit to create spiritual internal refinement. Right? That's the principle of building the temple, to engage in the physical to create spiritual, inner spiritual refinement. So that is the point of an offering too. So it says here, we said earlier at the precept of building the temple that at the root of the religious duty of the offering lies the purpose of making the spirit of the person who brings it worthy and upright. And therefore, to arouse the spirit of the person offering it, he was commanded to bring good, savory things, which are beloved to him, as we wrote above. So part of it is about the sacrifice of it, bringing yummy things that you appreciate and enjoy, excuse me, and letting go of them. So part of it is that. But part of it is also the honor aspect of it. You bring what you think is good. You're honoring somebody. So just like you wouldn't bring, let's say,
something you cooked that you didn't,
a burnt cake to somebody's house for Shabbos, or excuse me, the cheapest, grossest wine, like just because you want to, like you wouldn't bring a wine that you wouldn't drink. You might bring a wine you wouldn't drink if you know it's what they like. Let's say they like dry, you like sweet. You might bring a Merlot to somebody's house. But you're not bringing something lowly to somebody's house because it's not an appropriate offering. You want to bring something that's respectful. So you want to offer to God also something respectful. So yummy things, savory things. Savory here not meaning salty necessarily, but meaning things that are delicious, which are beloved to him, beloved to the offerer, as we wrote above. The salt in it is also for this root reason, so that this act will be complete, lacking in nothing according to the norms of human behavior in the matter. Then his heart will be more aroused by it, for anything without salt will not be pleasing to a man, neither in its taste or even in its aroma. And apart from this, there is another matter implicit in salt. So before we read that, let's just look at our sheet. Excuse me. So we do salt. We'll talk about salted in the mitzvah before. But we just read the physical reason for bringing salt. Salt makes things delicious. Right, so that's the physical reason. So we want to offer things that are as good as we can offer them. So salt is part of what makes things yummy. So that's the physical reason for offering salt. But now the symbolic reason for offering salt. Salt makes everything endure and prevents spoilage and rot. So too with an act of the offering. A man is saved from becoming spoiled. His spirit will be protected and it will remain in existence forever. So it's interesting because we'll see Rav Hirsch has a different reason, but in the same vein for this. So the symbolic reason is that salt is a preservative. So adding salt into it reminds us that what we're doing is preserving our souls.
Mm. And there's all kinds of things that have come out from this. Like when you have a new neighbor, you bring salt to the new neighbor.
Right. So is that Jewish? I'm not sure. I think that, I mean, we do, that's a thing that we do, but
no,
I think it might be from...
Well, then the other thing I've heard of is no matter who... asks you for the two things that you can't take from somebody are salt and I think water. that it, even in old ancient traditions, you could rob everything they have, but you have to leave them with, because it's a lifeblood.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can survive without.
That's like the code of thieves.
Furniture.
Honor among thieves.
Yeah, but you can't take salt. I think salt and water.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I've never actually heard of either of those.
That's interesting.
About bringing salt to a neighbor.
Yeah, so the way where I saw that was in It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh.
Right? So It's a Wonderful Life. So the mortgage company helps people build homes, and then they go to the home of one of the, you know, poor families that has their first home, and they bring them bread. Sugar and salt, I think. Mm-hmm. The bread that they should always have what to eat, and sugar their life should be sweet, and salt for something else. But they said it in that. So there was that was a traditional gift that I learned from that movie.
But I don't know that it is a Jewish gift.
I don't know if it's necessarily Jewish, but salt, as we know, worth your weight in salt, and salt is a big deal around the world,
well,
certainly.
It's a life, but you need it for life.
You
right.
call them the salt of the earth.
Salt of the earth, right.
To my grandchildren this No, but it's also a peacemaker.
Why is it a peacemaker? Because, I mean, as an offering to another?
It's used in bringing sides that were having a dispute together. Each person would bring their bag of salt. And one would mix one with the other, and the other mix one with the other. And it could never be separated, right?
Uh-huh.
Never separate those grains of salt.
So
there was called, it was called a salt treaty.
Fascinating, because that we're going to look into that here. I mean, not that practice, but that's interesting to have a salt treaty.
Right.
Fascinating, because we're going to talk about the salt covenant.
Oh, okay. Well, it probably was like a covenant between the two individuals.
That is interesting.
Mixing something to the point that it could never be separated.
Right. I've never read that years and years ago. And I don't remember where.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Iodide, as you know, is an important thing, in which it does not occur naturally in salt, but it's something that's added to salt. But I there's an advertising campaign, I think, in Africa and the poor countries where they need that a little bit, and they realized, the sociologists realized, that they were successful with their advertising campaign because it does bring up the IQ quite a bit, and that's what they advertised, eat salt, bring up your IQ, make you smarter. Well, they realized they were successful when on the playground they heard kids insulting each other. You're so stupid, what, you don't eat salt?
That's
the test of us. Right? That is right. It's penetrated. It's there. People get it.
It has to all come from here. I mean, not necessarily the iodine thing, but all of those things have to come from here.
Right. So salt as a concept. Well, but the question is why did... So yes, Torah is causative. So really we should understand philosophically that the reason why salt is so important is because the Torah commanded its usage. I think people who look at the Bible the opposite way, that it's responsive, would say that the reason why the Bible incorporated salt is because it's so important, right?
Right.
So, but clearly it's important, and clearly it's in the Torah, and we do understand that the Torah is causative, like, for instance, that we have parents because there's a mitzvah to honor them. That's how we understand it, that the reason why we're set up with needing parents instead of, let's say, popping out of the ground or coming from eggs or whatever, which we could have, God could have arranged anything for us, right? So the reason that we have parents is because we have a mitzvah to honor parents. So we need parents to honor. So here we have this salt. So let's see. So let's look back then at 1:18. So it just says how to salt it. So the concept of salting altogether, that's the first word on your sheet. So the salted, it should be salted from all sides, it says. And salted from all sides, the way that you kosher something over a fire, all the way around. You salt it the whole thing, all the way around.
When you soak it, you might even immerse it in salt water.
Well, not in the soaking and salting is not that. Soaking and salting is you salt it, you first soak it, then you salt. Wait, soaking and salting, right? I think you do. I never had to soak and salt anything. I don't know. Did you in your early? Yeah.
I forget the order.
I think you soak first, and then you salt, and then you rinse. Yeah. So you soak, I think, for half an hour. There's a certain amount of time you're supposed to soak for, and it's not supposed to be that long. And then you sprinkle salt, and then you dry it, and then you sprinkle salt over it, and then you let that sit for a little while, and then you rinse it. That's how you soak and salt. That's how you kosher meat. Or you can do it over a fire. You can salt as you're broiling. You don't have to soak first. And that's what we do for livers. Yeah.
You almost sound like you were saying you could take
non-kosher meat, mm-hmm. or kosher meat that hasn't been koshered.
Correct.
And put it over an open fire.
Correct. That's what you can do. Yes. There's two ways. So the way to say it is this. There's two ways to kosher meat. We buy meat koshered. It has to be shechted properly and kosher.
Right.
But then you can't eat it yet. It has to be koshered. So either you kosher it by soaking and salting, or you kosher it by broiling and salting. Either way, you salt. So you're using salt as an agent to remove blood. So
when you buy kosher meat, that's not a vegan.
Yes, today it is, which is why I don't know the order of it, right?
Except livers.
Livers cannot. So you can either buy them cooked.
You can't salt them.
You can soak and salt livers. They cannot be koshered by that method. They must be broiled and salted. It's the only way to kosher a liver.
So liver
by broiling. Right. So you either purchase it cooked and then it's been done to it, or you have to do that yourself.
Then you have to rinse the livers off after you've broiled them.
I don't know if you have to. You can look on. We did it once, and I looked on the Star K website, and it has the whole procedure. So if you ever want to do it, you can look it up on the internet, which is what we did.
Go to the deli and buy stuff.
Or you can go to the deli and buy it. And then you have to also kosher. We did it on our grill outside. You have to kosher the grill after you do it. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Or you can have a grate just for livers.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Which is people did. They had their liver tray and then
other.
Right.
I just covered up the farberware toning with foil. And then I have a different grate.
Right, right. So that's the thing is you have there is a procedure. Anyway, the point is salt is important to koshering, and then the way that you use it for koshering is the way that you use it for the sacrifice also, which is not about koshering, it's about offering it salted. So the proper way to do it is salt all sides like you would for koshering, and if you don't, even putting on some salt does the trick. And if you don't, then the offering is still good, except for the mincha offering. So, which is what it says here, because in the verse, if you look back at the verse, it says, and you shall not let the salt of the covenant of your God be lacking from your meal offering. That's a mincha offering. With all your offerings, you shall offer salt. So, the only negative really, the positive covers all offerings. The negative is specific to the mincha offering. So while it is, you should not offer any offering without salt. If you didn't do the mincha offering without salt, it's not a good offering. All the other offerings, bidyeved, is everybody familiar with that word? Bidyeved or bidyevad in Hebrew, bidyeved in English. So those are two important words. Lachatchila means in the first place, and bidyeved means after the fact. So lachatchila, you should salt it. Bidiyevid, if you offered it without salt, now the question is it good or not? Bidiyevid, it's good unless it was a mincha offering, which I guess you would have to re-offer. Those details would be found in the Gemara. He doesn't go into all the details of what happens if you don't, but he says where you can find them. So, okay, so but let's look further in 118. It has an interesting thought also, which Rav Hirsch goes into. let's see. In the middle of the paragraph on the bottom, the salt used for the offerings came from the public funds, like the wood for the altar of fire. And an individual was not to bring the salt or the wood for offerings. So even if you're bringing your own offering, there's communal offerings, which are paid for by money of the community. Then, of course, the salt that would be used on them, you'd expect to be paid for by community money. And I never really thought about who pays for the wood for the offering. Right? You might think that an individual has to bring the wood, the salt, and the animal, but not the case, he's saying here. The salt used for the offerings came from the public funds, like the wood, and an individual would not bring salt or wood for offerings. All this for the magnification of the glory of the temple, for in a place of wealth there is no penury. Right? So the temple is supposed to be a place of wealth, a place of having. So you couldn't possibly have a poor person bring a small offering with not quite enough wood or not quite enough salt, like just eking by. Right. So that was available. It had to be fully available in the temple so that there wouldn't be a sense of poverty in the temple. It had to be a sense of fullness in the temple. So that was always available, and that was purchased from the public funds. But Rav Hirsch also, the reason I'm pointing this out, so now we see one reason for why it's purchased from the public funds. But Rav Hirsch has another reason for that too, which is fascinating, which is why it pays to Rav Hirsch. Right, and then also I just want to point out that it is called the salt of the covenant. let's see, is that over here? Oh, it's just where it's on the top of page 17. The salt was applied at three locations. So when do you salt is the question. Three different times. In the lishka of salt, so there's a chamber of salt in the temple on the is number one, which we'll learn hopefully when we learn more about the shape of the temple and what the places are, on the ramp leading to the altar, mm-hmm. and at the head of the altar. So three different places. In the lishka of salt, they would salt the skins of the holy sacrifices. On the ramp, they would salt the limbs, and at the head of the altar, they would salt the handful taken from the meal, right? At the head of the altar, they would salt the handful taken from the meal offering, the frankincense that came with it. Meal offerings that were burned entirely and foul, sacrificed as an olah. The rest of its details are explained in the seventh chapter of the Talmud tractate Zevachim. And this applies only to male kohanim when the temple exists. If they don't do it, they transgress a positive commandment. Okay, so that's the salting. So let's look at what Rav Hirsch says. Oh, and I didn't show you what does say it, though. Melech Brit, where is it in there? You can trust me. It's in there in the Hebrew. It talks about the salt of the covenant. But does it say it in the actual pasuk? Let's look in the pasuk. I think it does. So in the verse... Yeah, it does say it, right? Yeah. In the verse itself, right. So I'll read you the whole verse. V'chol korban minchatecha b'melech timlach v'lo tashbit melech brit elohecha me'al minchatecha v'al kol korbanecha tekriv melech. Right, so it does say the salt of the covenant. And every allegiance gift that thou bringest near shalt thou season with salt and suffer not salt... And suffer